1999, debate number one. This is Ben Overby and Pat Donahue.
In-depth Bible study from both sides of Fairly Heard. Okay? We're not enemies. We've become friends over email mainly over the last several months. We're not enemies. We're friends. It's just a Bible study. And we both believe what we've come here to affirm and deny, but we're trying to get at an in-depth Bible study. There are a lot of verses in the New Testament that talk about disputing, what we call today debating, showing that it's authorized. There's an interesting verse in the Old Testament, Proverbs 18:17. It says, "He that is first in his own cause seemeth the just, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him." Now, the only difference between a debate, really, and a sermon is that you get the other fellow gets to answer what you're going to say. Wherein normally when we have sermons, that's not the case. But a verse like this would show that these things are necessary sometimes. Because he that is first in his own cause seemeth just, but his neighbor cometh and searcheth him. And that's the point of a discussion like this. So let's keep the right kind of attitude, the right kind of spirit, and understand that this is a Bible study. First chart I have up here talks about the proposition. Here's the proposition that differentiates Ben and I tonight. I am affirming that the Bible teaches that if a man divorces his wife for a reason other than fornication, sometimes I may say an unscriptural divorce, to be sure, for a reason other than fornication, and marries another, then the first wife may not remarry, even though her former husband is now committing adultery. Now, I have an example. I'll try to keep coming back to you with names to help us clarify what we're talking about with the proposition without names. The issue exemplifies. If Fred puts away Ethel, unscripturally, that is for a reason other than fornication, unscripturally, and then Fred marries Jane, Ben and I agree, right then, that Fred's now committing adultery. Okay? So he's divorced Ethel unscripturally, and now he's married Jane. He's committing adultery. I'm affirming that after those two events occur, Ethel may not marry John or whoever. And we're assuming here that John does have a right to marry a single person, for example. Now, Ben, he believes that Ethel does have a right to remarry because Fred is now committing fornication. I am maintaining that she does not because I believe that for Ethel to remarry, not only would Fred have to commit fornication, Ethel would have had to have divorced Fred for fornication. In this case, Ethel did not divorce Fred. Fred divorced her. That, I think, is the difference between Ben and me tonight. I will prove that the answer is no. Okay, go ahead. The first passage I want you to turn to is Luke 16:18. This won't be the only passage I turn to tonight, but I think it is probably the clearest in showing that this proposition is true. Because I pattern my proposition after this verse. Notice here is the verse in the King James Version at the top of this chart. Whosoever putteth away his wife and marrieth another committeth adultery. And whosoever marrieth her that is put away from her husband committeth adultery. Okay? Now here I'm comparing Luke 16:18 to my proposition. Okay? I believe it has the very same sequence of events. First of all, Luke 16:18, whosoever putteth away his wife. I have, if a man divorces his wife unscriptural, Ben and I would agree that this is an unscriptural divorce here. The exception here is not under consideration. So far it's the same. And then it says this man marries another. He commits adultery according to Luke 16:18. Not a proposition. He marries another. It's not in the proposition, but he commits adultery. I believe it's in the proposition later. Then it says, in Luke 16:18, whosoever marries her that is put away from her husband commits adultery. My proposition says the man's first wife may not remarry. Do you see how similar my proposition is to Luke 16:18? If a man puts away his wife, then he marries another, even after those two events occur, he's still wrong to marry that first wife. You see that? And that's what my proposition says. This verse, Luke 16:18, envisions a man in prayer, and here I'm getting to the names again, who puts away his wife, Ethel, unscriptural, and then marries Jane. The verse goes on to say that it is adultery if someone marries Ethel at this point, after Fred has put her away, and even after Fred has remarried and committed adultery, etc. Now, I'm not saying, I'm going to divide this verse up into two parts, Luke 16:18, A and B. In the King James, the A part would be ending at the colon, whosoever puts away his wife, marries another, commits adultery. The B part would be, and whosoever marries her that is put away from her husband commits adultery. That B part, I'm not saying this is the only scenario or situation that it would condemn. Now, it condemns marrying any woman who has been put away. If Brad had divorced Ethel for fornication, the B part of that verse would condemn Ethel right there. If Fred had divorced Ethel unscripturally, not for fornication, and Fred had never remarried, the B part would condemn Ethel remarried in that case also. But it also includes the exact situation we're talking about in the debate tonight. And that's really the way the scenario in the verse reads. The man, Fred, we put a name to it, divorces his wife Ethel, then he remarries. He commits adultery. But that adultery evidently doesn't automatically just free Ethel remarry, because the verse goes on to say, even after those two events have occurred, if someone else marries Ethel, that's adultery. You see that? And what this verse shows, and we'll talk about more about this later, it shows that not only is it important that fornication has occurred, and not only is it important who commits the fornication, but it's also important who gets the divorce. That's what this verse shows. Because if it wasn't important who got the divorce, then this right here will be in here. You see, because Fred has committed adultery. The first husband has committed adultery. But she still can't remarry. Evidently, then it matters who got the divorce. Ethel needed to be the one to get the divorce for her to be free to marry. Right. I believe we can do the same thing with Matthew 19, verse 9. Now, Matthew 19, verse 9, you're probably very familiar with that, has the exception in it. Luke 16, 18 didn't. So what I want to do in Matthew 19:9 is show you, and you already know this, that really there's two things taught in this passage. Here's the verse. Whosoever shall put away his wife, except to meet the fornication, and shall marry another, committed adultery. And whoso marries her which is clear away, that's committed adultery. Now, here's the way I like to put that. Here's what that verse says directly. Here's what it's saying directly. There's two types of divorce talked about in this passage. Not the fornication, that is any cause other than fornication, and then there's a divorce for fornication. Now, both of them would be our divorces, aren't they? There's two types of divorces, one scriptural, one unscriptural. So, this is the verse talks about directly if the divorce is not fornication. Directly, here's what it teaches. Whosoever shall put away his wife, not for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marries her, which is put away, that committeth adultery. So, if a man does not for fornication, he marries another, he commits adultery. That's what I believe the verse is saying directly. Now, here's what I believe the verse is implying. And when I say implying, I'm going to imply necessarily. We can know for sure this is the truth. It's implying or teaching an indirect, whichever way you want to put it. We look at this, when it says that he commits adultery, he divorces except for fornication and marries another, it implies that if he divorces her for fornication and marries another, he does not commit adultery. That's what it implies, though it doesn't say it directly. And so here's something else that it teaches through implication or indirect. Whosoever shall put away his wife for fornication and shall marry another does not commit adultery. And whoso married her, which is put away, that committed adultery. Now, my next chart, Rodney, I want to look at this first type of divorce, and then the next chart after that, we'll look at the second. Okay, Rodney? We're going to look first at the not for fornication. When we look at the not for fornication idea, it's going to be exactly the same as Luke 16, 18. Because Luke 16, 18 is almost word for word the same as Matthew 19, 9, except it doesn't state the exception. Here it is again, but with my sort of jiggling in there, just to put the not for fornication type in there. Whosoever shall put away his wife not for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. Whoso marries her, which is put away, doesn't commit adultery. So here's the idea of putting him her away not for fornication. Now compare the sequence of events, just like I did with Luke 16, 18. Here's what Matthew 19, 9 directly teaches. Whosoever shall put away his wife not for fornication, I have in my proposition, if a man divorces his wife unscripturally, and Ben and I both mean by that, not for fornication, and shall marry another, commit adultery. Mine says it marries another. Then notice the last part of this verse. And whoso marrieth her, which is put away, does commit adultery. The man's first wife may not be married. You see again how that when you look at Matthew 19:9, from the standpoint of this type of divorce, not fornication, my proposition is almost verbatim in there. It's talking about a man who divorces his wife, not fornication. Okay? And then he remarries. That's adultery. Now what about his first wife? Can she remarry? No. That's my proposition. Whether he remarries or doesn't remarry is really irrelevant in regards to Ethel. Not in regards to him, but in regards to Ethel. Why? It's because he divorced Ethel. Now, if he had committed fornication and Ethel had divorced him for that fornication, then Ethel could remarry. But the fact is, she didn't divorce him. He divorced her. And the Bible says, whoever marries her which is put away, that committed adultery. So after Fred has put Ethel away unscripturally, and even after Fred has remarried and committed adultery against Ethel, If someone marries Ethel, it's adultery. Again, it shows that who gets the divorce is important. Now let's talk about the second type of divorce that is talked about in Matthew 19:9, and that is a divorce for fornication. And if you broke it down, it would read like this: whosoever shall put away his wife for fornication and shall marry another does not commit adultery. Does not commit adultery if he puts her away for fornication. Now you're going to see why I want to talk about that, because that tells us what a man, or a woman, as the case may be, what a man has to do to be able to remarry without committing adultery, assuming his wife is still alive. First of all, his wife must have committed fornication. That's the first prerequisite. You can't divorce somebody for fornication if they hadn't committed it. So the first prerequisite for a man to strictly divorce his wife to be able to remarry without committing adultery is his wife must have committed fornication. The second prerequisite is that a man must put away or divorce his wife. Notice, if you want to be able to remarry without committing adultery, the Bible says you have to put away your wife for fornication. You have to be the one that does the putting away, the divorce. Okay? And number three, and these are all closely tied together, fornication, the fornication of the wife must be the reason or the cause that the man decides to put away his wife. He can't just put her away for any other reason. She's got to commit fornication, he's got to divorce her, not the other way around, and he's got to divorce her for that reason, not for some other reason. Now I want to emphasize, for the purposes of this debate, I want to underscore number two, because that's the difference, I believe, between men and me, or I, I'm not sure which one, Carol, in this debate. The man must put away or divorce his wife. That's what I want to say. That's the second prerequisite. I believe that the Bible is teaching that here, that the man must put away the wife. If he doesn't put her away, he has no right to remarry without committing adultery. Now this contradicts Ben's position, which says that the man may remarry as long as his previous wife commits fornication, even if he was not the one to actually get the divorce, much less get the divorce for fornication. Right. Now, this brings us up to a chart that this has been around for a number of years, the four possibilities. And I believe that it's been preached in sermons for years and years, and I believe it brings out a good point in this debate. Matthew 19:9, four possibilities. Here's the verse again. And I say to you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marry her, which is put away, doth commit adultery. There's four possibilities, because there's two types of divorce. For fornication, not for fornication. And then it talks about there's two types of people in the situation, one doing the putting away and one that is put away. The first situation or possible situation is a person who puts away their spouse for fornication. If Fred puts away Ethel for fornication, Fred may remarry without committing adultery. That's the first possibility. The second possibility is if Fred divorces Ethel for some other reason, like running a business. In that case, the one doing the putting away, Fred in this case, may not remarry. Matter of fact, the verse is he commits adultery if he does. The third possibility is the one who is being put away for fornication. If Fred put away Ethel for divorce Ethel for fornication, what about Ethel? The verse basically says whoever married her, which is put away, doesn't commit adultery. She may not remarry. You see? Okay, and then the fourth possibility. That's when Fred divorces Ethel for a reason other than fornication, such as burning the biscuits. May Ethel remarry in that case? No. The verse says again, whoever marries her which is put away, doth commit adultery. That's irregardless of the reason, the B part of the verse. Now, this fourth possibility is what I want to concentrate on. The one who is put away by their spouse for a reason other than fornication commits adultery when they remarry. I contend tonight that Ben is defending his person. He is defending this person who has been put away for a reason other than fornication and saying they may remarry. And I believe that's what the effect of the affirming tomorrow night. This verse shows, and it's actually the B part of the verse, shows that that's not true. Whoever marries her who's put away doesn't commit adultery. That's the person who's been put away unscrupulous. They may not remarry. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the bond, and that's talk about three or four places in the Bible, the marriage bond. One of them that we'd like to turn to is Romans 7, 2 and 3. We need to read that. We haven't read that yet. Let's read Romans 7, 2 and 3. There is another way to become free to remarry without committing adultery that I haven't mentioned. That is if your spouse dies. Romans 7, beginning verse 2, for the woman which has a husband is bound by the law. Now that word bound simply means obligated. Okay? Bound by the law to her husband so long as he lives. But if her husband be dead, she is loose. We might say released not obligated anymore. She is loose from the law of her husband. So then if, while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. Simply put, the wife is bound to the husband as long as he lives. So then if, while he's still living, if she's married to another man, and it doesn't tell why, it could be polygamy, bigamy, or she could have got an unscriptural divorce, it doesn't say. If he's alive, and she marries another man, that's adultery. That's all that it says. It covers all the situations. Okay? But why? Because she's still bound to him. She's still bound to the first husband, even though she's married to the second. Bound meaning obligated. God still, even though they're divorced, they're not married anymore, God still expects them to fulfill their vows that they made at the very beginning. In other words, he wants them to be married. 5 minutes. Okay? So reading this verse, and we've already talked about Matthew 19:9, we see there are two ways to break the marriage law. One, the death of the spouse. Two, we see that from Matthew 19:9, that if you divorce your spouse for fornication, you break the marriage bond, at least from the standpoint of your side, from your part. Now, neither of the above has occurred with respect to the wife in my composition. When Fred divorced Ethel, Ethel was still bound to Fred. That didn't change. It was unscriptural divorce. They're still bound. They're not married anymore, they're divorced, but they're still bound because Fred's still in it. So Ethel's still bound to them. Matter of fact, Fred's still bound to her. That's an unscriptural divorce. Ethel is still bound to Fred. Fred goes out and commits adultery, that didn't change anything. Ethel is still bound to Fred, and Fred's still bound to Ethel. What do I mean by that? They're obligated. They will repent, do what's right, they need to get rid of any false marriages and get back together. That's what I mean by that. They're still bound. So this woman, Ethel, whose husband Fred put her away unscripturally, and then Fred is remarried, the bond is still there, then. The husband has not died. Okay? And she has not divorced her husband for fornication. Instead, he divorced her. So the bond is still there. And that's why it's adultery if anybody marries that. This verse says it. Because she's still bound to Fred. Unscriptural divorces do not break the bond. Right? She's not free to remarry without committing adultery. If she did, she would be cheating on Fred. Even though she's not married to him anymore, she's bound to him. You see, fornication alone does not break the bond. And I think Ben would agree with that. What if I committed adultery, God forbid? My wife then would have the choice, a choice, to either divorce me for fornication or not. She could decide to stay with me. We see from that then that if the moment I commit fornication and cheat on her, that doesn't break the marriage bond. No, she has the option of staying in the marriage if she decides to. The bond, the marriage bond, is not broken until she divorces me for fornication. You see? So fornication alone does not break the marriage bond. It's divorce for fornication. Now, in my example case, Fred divorces Ethel. Bond is still there. The bond hasn't been broken yet. Fred commits adultery. That doesn't break the bond. Fornication alone does not break the bond. Ethel is still bound to Fred, and that's why it's a sin for somebody committing adultery to marry Ethel. Okay, Roger? Now, I want you to notice, we have been through all of these passages. We've been through two of them. But the big part in three different passages that Jesus gives us, that Jesus gives us, all three of them say that this put-away person cannot remarry. The wife of my proposition is a put-away person. That is, her husband put her away or divorced. Well, notice what Jesus said three times. Matthew 19:9b, whoso married her which is put away, that committed adultery. I believe that Ben is not accepting that in this debate. Notice he said it again in Matthew 5:32, whosoever shall marry her that is divorced commits adultery. Luke 16:18b, whosoever marries her that is put away from her husband commits adultery. Three times Jesus said that the wife of my proposition may not be married without committing adultery. Three times. I believe that Ben is contradicting the Lord then three times. My opponent's position defends a put away woman who remarries. My Lord said three times that adultery is committed if she does. She is still bound to her husband. That's why. One preacher said, I never really thought it made any difference who got the divorce. Well, according to Jesus, it sure makes a difference who got the divorce. Okay, Rocky. One minute. I'd like to look at this chart, reversing God's order. Now, when Jesus said in Matthew 19:9, whoever puts away their wife, separates into fornication, and remarries commits adultery, he is showing that you can divorce your wife for fornication and remarry without adultery. But as we noted, and I'm sure all of you believe, that fornication happens first, and then the man divorces her for fornication. How can you divorce somebody for fornication if the fornication had already occurred? So we're talking about the order here. Mark 16:16 says, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." But what does the Baptist say? "He that believeth is saved and is baptized." You see, they have the order reversed. They have saved before baptized, where Jesus has it different. The Bible in Matthew 19:9 and these other passages say, the fornication happened first, then the divorce, for fornication, then the remarriage. But Ben is advocating the divorce occurring, then fornication happening later, and then being able to remarry. You see the difference in the order? The Bible has fornication, then divorce. Ben had divorce, then fornication. Now, he's got a different order from Jesus, just like the Baptist has a different order from Jesus. We'll continue more next time. Thank you very much.
Ben Overby, denial number one.
Before my time starts, let me just echo what Pat said at the beginning of his speech, that is that he spoke to me when he said this is a discussion which we're studying, an important issue, but it's a Bible discussion. We're trying to deal with some matters that have been controversial for a long, long time, continue to be controversial, and I don't expect that because we have a discussion that it's going to stop being controversial. But we're looking at some aspects of the subject that have not been dealt with specifically very much in the past. And so just encourage everybody to be like the good Berean, get out your Bible, and after you go home and you soak in everything that both of us say, you study for yourself. Determine what the truth is, and God be glorified. Pat has put forward his proposition and affirmed it and said that Ethel must divorce Fred. And I'm wondering if Pat would mind the next time he comes up telling us what he believes the putting away means in Luke 16 verse 18. What he means the word putting away means in Matthew 19 verse 9. Does it mean what Pat seems to indicate that it means, that is, a civil document, a writing of divorce? That you have to follow this order, that Ethel has to give him the civil document of divorcement, and so forth. What does Matthew 19:9 be, or Matthew 19:9 in general, mean when it says putting away, the same with Luke 16, verse 18? I'll try to respond to a lot of the things you said specifically, Pat, and if I miss some, maybe I'll catch it as I go over some of the prepared rebuttal. He did say that Luke 16, verse 18b condemns anyone who has been put away and who remarries. And he said that. He said that Luke 16, verse 18b condemns anyone who has been put away and then remarries. But then he said Romans 7, Father. Romans 7 is a situation in which this woman can be put away, and she's put away for a reason other than fornication. And her husband dies, and Pat says that she can't remarry. And what that points out, and I may need to elaborate on this more later, is that you don't have a categorical statement in Matthew 19:9, nor in Luke 16, verse 18. That is, it's not a statement with reference to the put away woman that is true in every single instance, without exception, without qualification, absolutely. It's a general statement that certainly applies, but you see that it's qualified. Obviously by Romans chapter 7. And so we can't say on one hand that Luke 16 verse 18 you condemns any woman and then come along and say, but not the woman who's made this die. I believe that we'll find out through the course of this debate. At least I hope to point out that a person can be this woman who's put away and have reason to remarry even though her husband is still alive. Let me go ahead and get transparency 23. Thank you. The argument that Pat's making, the innocent party must divorce the guilty if freely married, he's saying it's got to follow that sequence. The innocent party has to, and the way he's using the term, I believe he means it to say, have a writing of divorcement, a civil, legal writing of divorcement, in order to be free to remarry. That does put all of the emphasis on the writing of divorcement rather than the action of leaving, separating, sending away, casting away, putting away, however it is that you want to put it. So the question that, you see on the flyer, does it matter who actually gets the divorce? Pat obviously is alluding to a writing of the divorce. And if that's the case, if what Matthew 19:9 says, and if what Luke 16, verse 18 says, that whoever gives the writing of divorce to their mate except fornication and marries another commits adultery, if that is to be understood as writing of divorcement, then it seems to me that Pat is implying that that writing of divorcement has got to say for fornication. It cannot say for irreconcilable differences. Because if we're going to interpret the scripture that way, a writing of divorcement, a civil, legal document, whoever gives a writing of divorcement except for fornication, it better say on there for fornication if we're going to interpret it that way. And if it comes out, if that's the truth, then certainly we would have to insist folks have a document that says for fornication given to them by a judge. I want you to notice this situation here just a moment. How could the innocent party ever put away the guilty, as Pat has put the proposition forward, in a situation like this? Here you have a marriage. If you don't mind, can you hand me that book?
It's a great book. Thank you, Chip.
Here we have a marriage that would take place, it would be like a common law marriage, in Roman custom, in Roman culture. And in situations like this, a person could just tell their mate, I'm going to leave, I'm in love with the next door neighbor, I no longer want you as my wife, and that was all that was necessary in order for this marriage to cease. There was no idea of divorce. It just wasn't. For folks in the Roman culture who would marry under this particular form of marriage. Now, let me just read you what you're looking at. This quote says, if marriage ended when one or both of them ceased to have this firm intention, notification or repudium meant telling the other party that the notifier no longer had the intention to be married, whereupon divorce took effect without more formality. Now, if the official divorce must be for fornication, then how could the innocent ever put away the guilty in these common law situations? Because the guilty person walks into the house and Fred says to Ethel, I don't love you anymore. I'm going to live with the next person. That's the divorce. All you have to do is verbalize the intent. And if we're going to say that following the custom of what the divorcement is going to determine somebody's future, not what God said, act of separation, what Apollo is, if we're going to say that, then we'll have to say that Ethel in that situation can't be married. He just walked in and he said, I don't love you. I love somebody else. That's the divorce. And in situations like that, how would Matthew 19:9 apply? If Matthew 19:9 is writing a divorcement, how would these Romans ever understand it? Let me have number 33, please. And here, I guess you can't see that, I'll read that for you. I agree with that. You've got the husband bound to the wife after the divorce. This husband disowns this woman and not fornication. He comes in and he says, I don't want to be with you anymore. And he moves in with somebody else. If this husband leaves his wife, not fornication, and marries another, then W, the wife, can disown him. Can disown him. There was no formality, yet the legislation of Matthew 5 and 19 had application. The innocent had to disown the guilty for fornication. This most assuredly would occur after the legal marriage had terminated. Here's what I mean. Under this type of marriage, the husband leaves the wife, and then, according to the Romans, the marriage is terminated. And I believe that what Jesus is saying in Matthew 19:9 is this woman has a right to disown, to repudiate, according to the word in Matthew 19:9, luo, to disown this man, to separate herself and say, you're not living my husband anymore for the cause of fornication. So how would your understanding of that scripture apply with a marriage like this? Does God hate the writing of divorcement, or does he hate the action? Does God hate the writing of divorcement, or does he hate the action? Now remember, Pat's proposition hinges on the emphasis being on the writing of divorcement. As you see here, the Pharisees asked Jesus the question, was it lawful to leave a woman? Lawful to stop cleaving to her, to separate from her, for just any cause? They asked the question, can we put her away? They didn't say, is it lawful for us to give her a right of divorcement? The question they asked is it lawful for us to go to another house and put her in another house? And Jesus said, no. And then the Pharisees said, well then why did Moses say, give her a writing of divorcement, and then to put her away? Jesus finally said, whoever does the action of putting away, divorcing, separating, disowning, and so forth, except for one occasion, to marry another, commits adultery. So what's God against? Well, he's against both. But he's against the writing of divorcement, incidentally. And Pat's position puts, again, emphasis on that, says that we've got to follow the sequence of events, and again, putting the emphasis on the incidental. He's against the action in general, the writing of divorcement incidentally. Legislation against the action is binding upon every culture at every time. Pat's interpretation of Matthew 19:9 and Luke 16 verse 18 would not have application for the folks under this Roman form of relationship. No writing of divorcement. But the way Jesus put it, he's against the action, not just this document. God is against, if the legislation is only against writing of divorcement, then it would have no bearing on any culture that does not control marriage through divorce. God is against marriage licenses, incidentally, when it is issued for two people who don't have a right to be married to each other. He is against the writing of divorcement, just what man is saying, again, incidentally. But again, Pat's putting all of his emphasis on this incidental. Number 28, Terry, and then I'll ask 29 in just a moment. But I'm going to try to illustrate a little bit more, because I do think this gets at the heart of where our misunderstanding, or at least our difference, is on this issue. The difference between a verb and a noun, as you see it here. If a person says that he is against running salary, if a person, here you have a verb, shall run, here you have a noun, a running salary. If a person says he's against a running salary, that doesn't tell you anything about whether or not he's against a person running. If a person says he's against speeding tickets, that doesn't tell you whether or not he's against a person with speed, it just says that we're against speeding tickets. Don't get caught. If a person says I'm against certificates of divorcement, that doesn't say anything about the people not doing what God said do, that is decree to each other. People could still separate. In fact, if you don't believe that people do that, when the pipe comes off, introduce you to some folks who will get a writing of divorcement and stay together to beat the system, that is, to gain more money from the government. So, to just say you're against a certificate of divorcement says nothing about whether or not you're against abolo, which is the word that is translated putting away in Matthew chapter 19. And the next point there, please, 29. Here you got an illustration to hopefully point out the fact that God is against the action and not the writing of divorcement, though he's against the divorcement, let's say, incidentally. In Malachi 2 verse 16, God says he hates something. It's not the writing of divorcement that he hates, it's the action of putting away. God said, oh, when you two people are joined together in a union, you don't leave each other. You continue to cleave to each other. Don't let man put asunder. In Matthew chapter 19, from the word "kerizo," which means to depart, translated over and over again in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, as depart. Don't let the man depart from the wife. The word "shalak" in the Hebrew language is Malachi 2 verse 16. The word "abeluo" means the same thing in Matthew 19 verse 9. The word "kerizo" found in Matthew 19 verse 6, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. These are all words. All of these are a form of just leaving each other, departing from each other. Biblion apostasion, that is a writing of divorcement, is in a class all by itself. It may or may not include separation, like the folks that will beat the system. It may or may not include departing. It is a thing, it is not an action. Now, get this point. It is a document drawn up by man, by which man gives his approval of an action already committed, the departing, the separating, and so forth. God hates the action, whether it includes man's approval or not. That's all I take a piece of paper is. I'm referring, please. Okay. What's my time, Ron?
You got about 7 minutes.
7 minutes. take a look at this chart if you would for just a moment. Here you got two people who are single, and they are in the state of the unmarried. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 10, remain unmarried. There's male and female. They're single. And then they're married. They join together. Now they're clinging to each other. Jesus said to do that. And the husband is clinging to the wife to the husband. So long as they were eligible to be married to begin with, now there is a bond created. On the seventh, as Pat has already pointed out, is the bond. They're bound by the law to each other. Not just to each other, but by the law to each other. Well, let's say the husband, Fred, is hired out. He says, I'm going to Shalaka, I'm going to Appaloosa, I'm going to Crete. He says, I'm going to do this action. I want you out of the house. Out of the house. Well, he moves into another house. She's in this house, but they're still bound to each other. They're still bound to each other. 2 or 3 months later, they go to the courthouse. Look what happens. They get a writing of divorcement. Man comes along and he puts a piece of paper on them to say, I approve of what you've already done. And God said the thing not to do is to leave each other. Here man comes along and he gives approval to the thing that God has said can't in Matthew 19, verse 9. Then he comes out of here. After the courthouse, look at their situation. Any difference between that and that? The courthouse has done nothing practically to change their situation spiritually. Here you got the husband has already left her. The husband is no longer cleaving. She's not cleaving to him. Yet they're still bound. The courthouse did nothing to impact the physical aspect of this husband-wife relationship. The writing of divorcement is merely man's approval of an action which has already occurred. Number 31 there. Thank you. And then look at this. What are the wife's options in this? Get rid of the difference. Here they're married. Here the action is. The man says out of the house. He kicks her out. He backs away. He departs himself. And then they go to the courthouse, the writing of the divorcement. They're still in the same situation here that they were here. This did nothing to change it. They're still husband and wife. They're still bound to each other. And when two people are tied or bound together, there remains the possibility of some unbinding. Then you come down to here. Still bound by the law, but the putting away has already happened. And notice that. They're bound by the law, the putting away has already happened, and the writing of the divorcement has happened. The husband, though, is still bound to the wife. Illustrated by this solid line. The wife is bound to the husband, illustrated by the dotted line. They're bound to each other by the law. The wife's options, remain unmarried. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 11. The wife's options, wait for reconciliation with A. If he ever decides to leave this woman, he come back. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 11. Or, put away her husband for fornication. She, though she has been given this document, this writing of divorcement, and has been put away unbiblically, Pat has already said they're still bound together. They're still husband and wife. And as long as they're bound together, one can put the other away. One can put the other away. Now, Pat reads Matthew 19:9, and a lot of other folks do too, and Luke 16, verse 18, and they say, here you have a plain scripture that says that if this put away woman marries, then she's going to commit adultery. But you already say it's qualified by Romans chapter 7, so in that case, you're not committing adultery. And I would say here that if this man has put her away unbiblically and they're still bound together, then there is the opportunity for them to be unbound. What are we going to say if we disagree with that? I know that Pat would agree with this. If they're in this state, he's put her away, he's with somebody else. What if he puts her, this wife away, the second wife, and remarries his wife? Remarries his wife. Now did she put him away? And Pat would say yes. And when he does, again, it just alludes to the point that his emphasis is on the writing of divorcement and not the action which Jesus was against the writing of divorcement incidentally. So the woman here, being still bound to her husband, puts him away, and notice what happens in this illustration. She repudiates him. She disowns him. Now, I'm sure we'll talk about how that can happen, given the fact that the writing of divorce has occurred. But she repudiates, she disowns him, and this broken line is gone. She's no longer bound by the law to her husband. He's still bound to her, and he cannot remarry. He's put away guilty pardon. So, when Pat makes the argument that the sequence of events must occur in the way that he describes, he is suggesting that all emphasis needs to be on the writing of divorcement. But some cultures don't have a writing of divorcement. A writing of divorcement may or may not sever the biblical union. That's, everybody would agree to that. A lot of divorcement may or may not sever a biblical union. The courthouse does nothing to change the binding. In a real way, in an eternal way, they're still husband and wife, no matter how you put it. They are still bound to each other. God is against the action of departing, leaving, casting away, and is against the writing of divorcement incidentally, like it would be a marriage license if two people were marrying to all my things. Pat's statement does have some validity, though. If he means divorce in the sense in which Christ used the word, that is, apoluo, the action of putting away and not this writing of divorcement, because I do believe that essentially the person has to put the other individual away in order to be free to remarry. Pat would just say that she's in a position now as a put-away person. She can't put him away. The writing of divorcement has occurred. I'll contend that the divorcement that Jesus is against is the action, and they're still bound together. And even after that action occurs, she can repudiate, she can counter, and she can then be free to remarry.
1 minute.
Mark chapter 10, verse 12. Jesus is teaching that the wife who puts away her husband and marries another commits adultery. The wife who puts away her husband and marries another commits adultery. I'm interested in how Pat interprets that. These are Jews. And the wife didn't give the husband a writing of divorce, but no rabbi, even now, would accept that. But Jesus is saying here that the wife is not to put away her husband and remarry, because if he does, it's adultery. So what does that word mean? What does that put away mean? She's not going to get a writing of divorce. Jesus is saying, you, even as a Jew, woman, don't you leave your husband and go out and marry somebody else. Let you do that, just go against the religious custom and tradition and so forth. And Jesus is saying, don't do that. He's pointing out what he's truly against, the action of one leaving the other.
Thank you.